The following is a paid program, and the views expressed on this show do not represent the views of WJZ-FM, Entercom Communications, its sponsors, or affiliates.
This is The Fanimal. When it comes to sports, don't be just a fan. Be a Fanimal. Now, here are the hosts of The Fanimal, Tony Lombardi and Miles Goodman, on 105.7 The Fan.
Good morning, Baltimore. I'm Tony Lombardi, and welcome to The Fanimal. Thanks for joining us today. The NFL Scouting Combine is underway. General managers have gathered. The rumors are flying, and several interesting names are being pegged to the Ravens by various sources. We'll discuss each. Ozzie Newsome, silent for many months, took to the podium yesterday at the Combine. He had some interesting things to say. We'll review some of those highlights. Like many of us the past couple of days, the Ravens are running against the wind. Like that, Miles?
I like that, yeah. Okay. Good start.
They have some significant changes ahead and also some challenges, and we'll dive deep into those during the program. Some big names within the Orioles organization, both on and off the field, they have some expiring contracts at the end of 2018. This might be the end of the Orioles world as we know it. We'll talk about that. We'll touch down with Utah Street Report's Derek Arnold, and we'll discuss that. Each week, we feature live in-studio musicians. This week, our musical guest is Jamie Bishop. Reminder, also, please visit our Facebook page, The Fanimal, and follow us on Twitter at RSR Lombardi and or at The Fanimal. Joining me, as always, my trusty sidekick, Miles Goodman. How are you today?
Good morning, Tony. It's a windy, windy weekend.
Yeah, man. And also in studio, to my left, Russell Street Report's Brian McFarland. How are you, Brian?
Good. Good morning.
All right, let's get right to it. Ozzie took to the podium, and he had a few things. He said a lot of things. I think he spoke for about 15 or 16 minutes. I thought it was a little shorter than I expected it to be. I thought it was going to be longer than that. But Ozzie, you know, he's got a hot-footed off the podium because he doesn't really like to talk to the media too much. So anyway, a couple of things that he said. On the quest of the Ravens to upgrade the wide receiver position, Ozzie said this: "We're looking for the opportunity to change that room in terms of personnel and the people that are in that room, and we are not going to leave any stones unturned." Miles, your thoughts?
Well, it sounds like no one's safe. And we're going to start, it sounds like we're going to build around and start with Perryman and Moore. But Perryman, he put on notice, basically said, this is your year. Doesn't sound like they're going to sign him to his option year. So basically, you're starting with Perryman and Moore. So what I look for them to do is make a deal. They're going to go out and make a deal with a guy, you know, with the Dolphins for a guy like Landry. They'll go to the free agent market for maybe a guy like Terrell Pryor, take a long shot. And they'll go to the draft in the mid rounds for a wide receiver because I don't see Ridley falling to them in the first round.
You know, a thought crossed my mind too when Ozzie said, we want to change the room in terms of personnel and the people that are in that room. I even thought, Brian, it may have been talking about the coaching.
That sounds,
although it's
like
late
it.
In the game it's, to do that.
I can't imagine they would now, but that crossed my mind as well. You're looking at it just, you know, and I. To me, that's talking about Mike Wallace, too. Wallace is kind of an up-and-down guy. You know, he's happy, he's not happy. I mean, they've talked about him being a better leader than he was earlier in his career, but I thought that was – but see, Salk's, too. And I mean, yeah, that's the prima donna wide receiver routine, obviously. But I thought that, too, and, you know, I thought Wallace was possibly, you know, a guy that would come back. But that seemed to me to say, I mean, they're just going to wipe it out and start over.
Well, same thing with Macklin. You've got Macklin under contract, but yeah, I just can't see any way he's back, especially with the cap number.
Right.
Well, that's the next topic. And as he said, when asked about Jeremy Macklin, we have some decisions that we have to make in the next 2 weeks. We have not come to a point where we have decided that this guy's going to be here, this guy's not. But that will occur in the next 2 weeks. Okay. Brian, well, I think the handwriting's on the
right.
wall.
Well, certainly with a guy like Macklin, it is. That also said to me that they're probably going to some guys and saying, you need to cut your salary down by a million or two here and there. And I think that was kind of putting agents on notice that, you know, if you think it's coming, it's coming. And your guy needs to, you know, play ball with us or we'll decide he's not going to hang around.
Question was thrown at Ozzie about the position of quarterback. And they asked if they would draft a quarterback in 2018. And Ozzie said this, wherever quarterbacks fall on our draft board, that's where they fall. That's why we drafted Keith Wenning. Ooh, there's a name. That's why we drafted Tyrod Taylor. It's no different this year. We'll set the board, and if we get to a position in the draft and a quarterback is the best player available, we're going to take him. Now, the way I look at that, and the operative words to me there, when we get to a position in the draft, I think in that statement, he's basically saying we are not going to spend a draft pick, perhaps not on day one or day two. He brought up the names Keith Wenning and Tyrod Taylor, which were both day three picks. So my take is that round four is the earliest you'll see the Ravens put a quarterback on the board.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think so. I mean, you've also got, you know, Harbaugh's on the hot seat. Ozzie, to an extent, is on the hot seat. He wants to go out, you know, up, getting him back to the playoffs. So they're going to use those early draft picks on guys that are going to play this year or hopefully play this year. And, you know, a quarterback, a developmental quarterback, when you have Flacco around, is just not part of that equation.
They talked about fan discontent, and it was brought up to Ozzie about the empty seats in the stadium. And Ozzie said, not only, and they said this, you know, what do you think about Steve Bisciotti's concerned about the fan discontent? And he said, not only does Steve see that, I see it. I'm there every home game and I look around our stadium. I see that it's not the same as it was. I have to get a better product on the field. I think our fans are going to show up if I do.
He sees it correctly. If you've been to the games for 20 years, 21 years, you see the difference in how it looked when in 2000, and even in 98 when they opened the new stadium. They've got a lot of work to rebuild. They're doing work within the community. There's a lot of community outreach going on by the Ravens right now. They're emailing PSL holders information about stuff they're doing. I think you have next to you a brochure that they sent out to PSL holders. They're doing a lot, but they've got a lot to overcome. And it's not only the play on the field, because we've had poor play before and the fans have come out. There are extenuating circumstances here that they need to realize. I think they're trying to rebuild, but it may take more than a season to bring some of the fans back.
You can't flip a switch and change it immediately. They'd like to, but you can't. It takes a little time. This is damage control. And I think they're doing a really nice job now to get into the community. I think they have to do it in a public way so everybody sees it, because winning will cure a lot of things. But I still think there's a segment of the Ravens fan base that has to be able to say, okay, they're recognizing that we're ticked off about these player protests and they're doing things in the community to rectify that. You can't undo what was done. The bell was rung. Now you can only do damage control, and I think they're doing a really good job. Unfortunately, I think fans want to see it happen immediately, and it just takes a little time.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I part of that quote that I like is that Ozzie is taking credit for, you know, a lot of times we don't hear from him, and he's behind the scenes, and Harbaugh's got to be out front, and, you know, Harbaugh's got to take the brunt of things sometimes. But Ozzie was saying, if I get better players, and he's, you know, whether it's the fans will come back or not, he's taking, you know, he's taking the blame for what's happened with the roster the last couple of years. So I seems like he wants to make sure that they go, you know, he goes out with a bang, so to speak, and he gets them back to where they need to be.
It was interesting. I think it was Jerry Sandusky that asked a question during the presser with Steve Bisciotti, and he talked about, do you think that the things that are happening with the fan base will affect the way you make player personnel decisions? And Bisciotti's quip was, were you at the meetings in Jupiter? Because that's kind of how they're seeing it, that what's happening with the fans, they want to put excitement back in that stadium. And he even said, it's probably a good chance we're not going to take a defensive tackle with our first pick.
Right.
But they're being linked to offensive tackles, and that's the funny thing right now. So, but I do think it's good to see that the organization's taking responsibility right now. They're stepping up. They're acknowledging that there are issues, and they're trying to resolve them with the fans. So you have to give them credit for trying here.
Absolutely. Let's shift gears for a couple of minutes. We're going to go back to the Mobile One hotline. pick up my colleague and the senior editor for Utah Street Report, Derek Arnold. Derek, how are you this morning?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, good.
I'm all right here. I have some siding in my backyard. It's flying off my house, but all my trees are still up, so I'm not going to complain too much.
Right. I've heard there's a lot of trees, and driving down Falls Road, you saw a bunch of trees that had fallen over. So Derek, let's get into it. Let's talk about the Orioles a little bit. They finished in 2017 with 75 wins, good for last place in the AL East. Now, this year, the over and under is set for 72.5 wins, which on a previous show, I've taken the under. Miles is going over. I don't know if he's smoking crack or what, but he said the Orioles are going to win 85 games
in 2018.
Wow. So,
oh, I like it.
DA, what did they do to get better this offseason?
So far, their, quote, big signings have been Andrew Kashner and Colby Rasmus, two guys who don't really move the needle for me, and I think most fans would agree with that. Now, an optimist like maybe Miles would say that, hey, you know, last year they were right there in the thick of things in early September, and then they had that collapse where they only won 5 of their last 25 games. So as long as they could, you know, not have a collapse like that and avoid having historically bad starting pitching again like they did last year, why couldn't they contend again? And that would certainly be a very rosy view of things, in my estimation.
Very, very rosy. But it's the same thing every year, I think, with the Orioles. You have this starting pitching that can't get into the fifth or sixth inning. They burn out the bullpen. By the time mid-August rolls around, those guys are spent, and their effectiveness is, you know, that's a strength of the team. It has been for years. But then that strength becomes a weakness because they're just spent.
Yeah, you saw O'Day start to struggle. Even
O'Day's
being hurt.
Done. Yeah. He's so done.
You saw Britton, even with all the saves, start to struggle a bit. And you saw a lot of the pitchers struggling down the stretch, and the starting pitching has been a struggle. I think the big question mark is if the Orioles get out of the gate slow, what do you do with Manny? Do you move him, and does he have any value to move at that point?
Manny has tons of value, but the Orioles have no leverage, and that's the problem. They gave up their leverage last year.
Yeah.
When they were all in on this team. You know, they're such a one-dimensional baseball team, and they haven't changed the dimensions at all. But, you know, let's talk about the pitching again. They added Kashner. Derek, is Kashner an upgrade over last year?
He's an upgrade in the sense that he'll be taking starts from guys like Wade Miley and Ubaldo Jimenez, who a lot of fans look at that as sort of addition by subtraction. Now, Kashner himself, he had a 3.4 ERA last year in Texas, which is very good, and any Orioles fan would take that in a heartbeat in this rotation. But sort of like some guys they've signed in the past, like, again, Ubaldo and Giovanni Gallardo, Kashner has strikes popping up where his velocity is trending in the wrong direction. His strikeouts per nine are trending in the wrong direction. So he looks like a guy that might be due for some regression, unfortunately. But still, in this rotation, if you can come in and have an ERA anywhere under 4, you're an upgrade.
You were the ace.
I was going to say under 5.
I was going to say under 5, too.
In that sense, absolutely. Ideally, Andrew Kashner would be a number 4 or number 5 starter, not a number 2 or number 3 like he's going to be in this rotation.
We're speaking with Derek Arnold on the Mobile One Hotline. He's from Utah Street Report. Derek, big names, both player-wise and management-wise. Manny Machado, we mentioned his name just a few moments ago. Adam Jones, both have contracts that are ending in 2018. Buck Showalter and Dan Duquette, their contracts are over in 2018. What's going on with this team?
Yeah, it's a very big question heading into this year. It's not completely out of the norm. Last year in New York, Joe Girardi and Brashman were also both on expiring contracts, but it sort of felt like they had more of a plan than the Orioles do. Of the guys that you mentioned, I'd really only be confident about Buck being back as an Oriole in 2019, and I don't even know if that's in the same role as on-field manager, if Buck's going to be moving upstairs somewhere to do something with Brady Anderson. No one really knows what this team will look like either as far as front office structure or the on-field product next year, and that has a lot of O's fans very, very upset, quite uneasy heading into the season.
I get the feeling that the team, the organization, is trying to cater to the fans and trying to put a competitive team, not necessarily a winning team, but a competitive team on the field to try to keep their interest. But I got to believe that there are a lot of smart sports fans in Baltimore that if they understood what the organization was doing, if they went through a rebuild and really committed to it, I think the fans would be behind them 100%.
Oh, absolutely. I interact with a lot of O's fans, and that is definitely the opinion that I hear most. Now, Peter Angelos never speaks to the media or anybody anymore. But back when he did, when he first took over the team, he sort of came out and said that. He said something along the lines of, we think we owe it to the fans to try to put a competitive product on the field every year, or else why would they come out and see us? And while you can understand where he's coming from, like you said, most fans at this point would love to see some sort of vision with a rebuild. You look at teams like Houston and the Cubs, who have sort of torn it all down and then built it back up. The Orioles never, ever commit to something like that, and that's something that would be quite welcome for a whole lot of fans.
Because the blueprint's in place, and it's a blueprint that has been successful, so why not follow that from some other clubs? So I agree with you. Now, back to Buck Showalter for a quick second. With Buck, you know, I've heard from people that are in and around the organization that Buck really wants to be that GM. He doesn't want to travel with the team as much anymore. You know, he's getting up there in age, and that he wants that GM position, because I've often asked myself, why, given his skills as a manager, does he hang around with this organization? And I think that might be the reason.
Yeah, and while we really don't know if he would be any good at that job, it certainly wouldn't be a possibility to envision something like a another two-headed GM with Buck and Brady Anderson, sort of like the O's have done in the past with Mike Flanagan and Jim Beattie, and then Mike Flanagan and Jim Duquette. So it's not without precedent for the Orioles to do something like that, and it really wouldn't surprise anybody.
We're speaking with Derek Arnold from Utah Street Report on the Mobile One Hotline. Derek, okay, let's get to it. Best case and worst case scenario for the Orioles in 2018?
Well, I think the best case is something like Miles is predicting, and for those 85 wins to happen, you'd have to think Mandy bounces back, Andrew Kastner is what he was, Chris Tillman bounces back, everything sort of goes right. And I think even if everything goes right here, unless everything like that goes wrong in places like New York and Boston, I think the best case for this team is still sort of a wild card contender. Whereas the worst case might not even be everything falling apart and them being 15, 20 games out of first and 10 games out of the wild card as the deadline approaches, because then maybe you would see them sell off some of those assets like we were just talking about and build for the future. I think the worst case scenario is they hang around 500. And unfortunately, I also think this is probably the most likely scenario. They hang around 500 and they're somewhere in the mix for that second wild card, like pretty much everyone is the way it's designed now. And as a result, those guys we talked about earlier in the in our conversation, like Brock and Britton and Manny, they all just walk at the end of the year and aren't traded for something better.
There he is, Derek Arnold, Utah Street Report. Derek, thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, it's time for some Fanimal Crackers. Plus, we'll touch down with this week's musical guest, Jamie Bishop. Keep your dial set to 105.7 The Fan. We are The Fanimal.